you monsters out there, and welcome to Post Show Recap's coverage of The Witcher Season 2. There is now officially Season 2 out. It has dropped from above like a golden bathtub.
Woot woot!
And here we are to talk about it. I'm Mike Blue, and the woot woo you're hearing is someone who knows a lot about two things, love and blood, Angela Bloom. Angela, how are you?
I really hope that's not me, but okay.
As in the introduction or your name?
No, the love and blood thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen.
I haven't been cursed, and love and blood is the only cure.
I mean, listen, we're going to talk a lot about beasts, but personally, all I'm looking at right now is a beauty.
Oh, boy. This was an episode.
This was an episode.
A lot of stuff happened.
Yeah.
Not only did we pick right back up, we introduced a whole new monster.
Mm-hmm.
We basically just jumped right back in.
Yeah, seriously.
Not only did we get a recap and a conclusion to a lot of stuff from the last season, but we also got a full monster of the week.
Now, that being said, this did feel a bit more concentrated and simplified,
yes,
obviously, than the last season. Major complaint from that. Too many timelines, a little bit of confusion, mm-hmm, going on. Things are more truncated now. It seems like everything is happening simultaneously.
Yes, we're in one timeline.
We're in one timeline. And I gotta say, overall, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it did. I was a little worried because I had been reading a lot of whispers on the dark net about how it was a more serious version. You know, there wasn't as much comedy, and I felt like they kind of hit the comedy well in this.
And look, maybe it's because of the choice in guest actor. We will certainly get into that. But yeah, I think to a certain extent there was a very jovial nature around it. Even I think some of the more downtrodden conversations, your Yennefers and Fringillas, for example, I think still had a tinge to them. Like we talked about in our very first podcast, that's what something that we really love about The Witcher is,
yeah,
the odd amount of lightness they have in some very dark material. And I think we're still on there.
I didn't want to hype it up too much in my own mind, though. So I did go in with lower expectations, because I do think I first started watching the show being I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
So
just continue setting that bar, then that way we'll be able to clear it every time.
Exactly.
So before we get into any more specifics, let me just sort of introduce what's going on here? Because there maybe have been some people that sort of wander their way into this, right? Like maybe Geralt and Ciri wandering into an abandoned manor, or at least they think it's abandoned. So they might not know exactly what's happening here. So here on Post Show Recaps, of course, we cover a lot of things in the Netflix realm, a lot of things in the fantasy realm, and there's a little bit of a middle of the Venn diagram here in the form of The Witcher. And so we are doing coverage of Season 2, which just dropped on Netflix, all 8 episodes by the time you all are listening to this. But we're going to tackle coverage a little differently, because obviously, with 8 episodes dropping at once, the big question is, how often do you do podcasts? So here's how things are going to roll. Every Saturday, so I know it's coming out on Friday for the first episode, but every Saturday moving forward, we are going to be recapping an episode of The Witcher Season 2. So the next 8 weeks, you're going to have Witcher podcast, maybe even beyond.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, and happy Honda days.
Our gift to you.
Truly, the gift of gab, perhaps. But each podcast is going to take 2 forms, as it were, maybe a man and a monster in that regard. The first part is just going to be, a usual run-of-the-mill recap of the episode. Talk about the things we liked, the things we didn't like. But we know that due to the Netflix model, there are some bingers out there. And we want to be able to, encapsulate your feelings as well. And so the second part of every episode recap podcast is going to be from the perspective of people who have already watched the entire season. So obviously, I can imagine with the way the plot accelerates, there are probably some moments, characters that play differently in retrospect, especially if there are mysteries involved or anything like that. Again, who knows what The Witcher Season 2 is going to provide, but we're going to try to fully encapsulate both Netflix experiences, whether they be piecemeal or binging. So hopefully, no matter how you take in The Witcher, there'll be something for you out there as we cover it weekly. Now, that being said, this week, because this is coming out on the day it's released and Angela and I have not had enough time to watch the entire season, we're not taking on the macro spoiler-filled section of the podcast. This one's just going to be a plain old recap, but a lot happened in this episode, so I think it's still going to be a lengthy one.
Yeah, still here.
Still here. And that being said, we want your support as well all season long, and luckily, now that the season has started up, we have some nifty little links and other things that you can do.
Nifty.
So nifty. So the first thing is, obviously, we want your feedback all season long. Now, you have a couple of ways of addressing feedback to us. Of course, you can email. You can email mike@postshowrecaps.com. When you do, just make sure you put in the subject line of the email what episode number it's referring to, or if it's like a book question, for example. So I could just send that Angela's way. Just make sure, again, if you're taking in one gulp, you know, what you're referring to specifically, so that we sort of attribute
the feedback.
Yeah,
and if it's a video game question, don't ask me.
Yes, I'll take the game questions if there are specifics about that. And then also, if you are a patron of Post Show Recaps, there is a specific channel in the Discord for The Witcher. I'm sure discussion will be lit, like a nice little weird, like, carousel shadow puppet thing that was going on once the episodes drop. Much like sort of with the emails, I would say spoiler text is very much recommended. Just make sure you put the episode title beforehand or episode number so that I can hopefully gather that feedback, because we're going to try to, you know, use the feedback every week from the community here on Post Show Recaps. Something you can do right now, though, is subscribe to our new Witcher-only podcast feed. Of course, if you've listened to podcasts on Post Show Recaps, you've heard this spiel before. You know, show-only podcast feeds are very beneficial, especially those that you maybe have, again, wandered in, who don't necessarily listen to other Post Show Recaps podcasts but want to check out The Witcher. So we very much appreciate if anyone and everyone listening right now goes to postshowrecaps.com/WitcherPod, subscribe, rate, and hopefully review, if you can, on the podcatcher of your choice. Now, that being said, I would hope they're good reviews.
Yeah, I was going to say 5 stars only, or I impale you on a stake.
Yes, and she will do it, folks. Look, we know how to deal with trolls, and you know what happens to monsters in this show. So I'm just saying, don't be a troll.
I was going to say, there was no troll in this episode.
Yeah, but, you know.
Close enough.
Close enough. There was some trolling going on,
yes,
at certain points.
Sure, for
so,
sure.
So, again, you know, send in feedback. Also, we're getting this out at a relatively quick turnaround from when the episodes drop, so there will be no feedback today. But we're hopefully going to incorporate episode 1 feedback into our episode 2 podcast. So don't let this podcast deter you from writing in your thoughts and questions about episode 1 as well. And again, postshowrecaps.com/WitcherPod to subscribe to the Witcher-only podcast feed. I did speak about the Discord, which is one of the benefits of being a patron of Post Show Recaps. If you go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps, you can become one at the $10 level, get access to the Discord. But if that has not, intrigued your fancy, I'll throw us to commercial. I'll take us, you know, into an early commercial break so we can just go right on through the episode once it begins. But to get you there, I recorded this a couple weeks ago, and I'm just going to keep playing it like it's a top 100 hit on the radio. Here is a little ditty in honor of Yaskier, fan favorite character, that might encourage you to become a patron of Post Show Recaps. Take it away, me! When you listen fast to all our podcasts, an impressive feat since our network is vast. There's actually much more behind an online door. Become a patron and enjoyment will soar. So many different perks, a Discord to lurk, get early releases, and maybe some merch. Podcast exclusively, like Extra and YA. It's but tons of content to fill out your day. Toss a coin to Patreon, support Post Show Recaps, support Post Show Recaps, oh. Toss a coin to Patreon, come join our community.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Wow, that was so beautiful.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was truly
I was thinking about the commercials, though. I am not that conceited.
Oh, well,
I'm very grounded like Geralt, you know? I know my skills, but...
You're such a Geralt.
In many ways.
I think you're more of a Jaskier, but that's fine.
I mean, definitely. I mean, listen, I would only dream to be as dreamy as... I will say this till the end of time. Henry Cavill just looks so... goddamn
yeah,
good.
He looks so good.
As Geralt.
He looks so good, but a little dirty, but good.
Little dirty, but good. Smells like a horse's ass, according to a certain someone. Well, that being
just glad this isn't like, what is it, 4D, where they have like smells and sounds.
Yeah,
and
this
stuff.
Is no like a Disneyland, you know,
Muppets.
Adventure exhibit or anything like that.
Yeah.
That'd be a Witcher's 4D smell-o-vision thing.
Not good. It smells like.
It might appeal to certain people.
I don't think so.
Well, let's get into.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Let's do it.
Let's talk about A Grain of Truth. The line will get invoked later on by what I would argue is the character of the episode, which we'll certainly get into. Do you find, though, is this one of these, like, thematic titles that you feel like applies to multiple characters?
Well, yes, because it is the title of a story in The Last Wish.
Oh, okay.
Which is about Nivellen.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically Beauty and the Beast. It's Nivellen, the Brooksa, all of it. It's literally page for page. At the end of this episode is that short story.
Yeah, because I read up a little bit on the story A Grain of Truth, and I know that, you know, there is a grain of similarity between the two of them. I know that, like, the origin story between Geralt and Nivellen
there was no origin story. He just kind of, like, happens upon this town where he sees a lot. He sees, like, the, so
Little
we open
town.
The, well, we open the episode
in. A literally cold open because it is freezing outside.
And we open the episode with, like, basically a family getting murdered.
Yeah. I would say we see, so it's a, what, it's a man.
It's like a merchant.
A man and his wife and their daughter. They're just trying to, like, find lodging, shelter, literal shelter. Shelter from the storm, and the parents get just straight up ripped in half.
Yeah, so real just right in there. And this is, like, very similar to season one when you're in it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, though, because we talked about this in our previous podcast that, you know, season one opened with the deer,
mm-hmm.
right, at the edge of the lake, and then the spider creature got to it.
Mm-hmm.
The Nightmare of the Wolf anime opened with just, like, this was more like the Nightmare of the Wolf opening, right, where it was just, like, that was a kid pissing and singing a little ditty to himself, and then, like, a creature just came out of nowhere and killed all his family.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that this family is, you know, one of the Brooksa, like, casualties.
Yeah. I would say the Brooksa, real, I don't know, indelicate with this. She's not nearly
violent. It's pretty much explained later in the episode that, like, she has no control. That she's trying to control herself, but she has no control. So when she goes after people, she just, like, goes after them. Whereas when she's, like, feeding on Nivellen, it's, like, a little bit more delicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking just through the season one titles. I do believe this might be the first one that just straight up, you know, cops a title from the story of the same name.
Well, and I think that one of the things the showrunners talked about was it was the one story that they weren't able to squeeze into season one. So
this was almost like the hidden ninth episode of season one.
Yeah, or at least the story was. But they wanted to, you know, to kick it off, include Siri in it. Whereas in the original one, Siri's not there for this. It's just basically him discovering Nivellen, discovering that this entire town has been taken over by this Bruxa. He thinks it's something else and leaves, and then comes back and kills the Bruxa in the exact way that they do in this. And then we find out that Love and Blood is, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah. Let's not skip too far ahead.
No, let's...
let's go chronologically, baby.
Yeah, because again, the show will do that for once. I do want to point out the credits symbol. So we talked about this a bit last time, how throughout season one, it was interesting. They sort of showed different sigils, and then almost like Game of Thrones style in the finale, they all kind of merged together into the wolf symbol that is on Geralt's medallion. This one seems, I don't know, super unique
to me. This is the bat. This is her as a bat.
Do you think that's the bat creature?
Yeah, it 100% is.
Yeah, I mean, it was super oblong. It was, like, asymmetrical.
No, it's wings.
Yeah, I guess those are wings. I don't know. It's like a Rorschach painting to me.
Yeah, it's definitely supposed to be that, I think.
Mm-hmm. So we cut, though, to... we actually start in... so it seems like we're still in Sodden, right? Like, this is still
the site.
Yeah,
this is, like, right outside of Sodden. And then I think what happens is everybody gets moved to Aretusa as, like, a post-war hospital.
Yeah, like, triage.
Yeah.
But for right now, we cut to this really big shot. And I love starting with, like, sort of the charred remains of the forest that assumingly was from Yennefer's big flamethrower attack. But cutting to something even more smoldering, Viljaforts is just, you know...
love him.
Helping... to kill off all the stragglers. They say that they killed 20,000 Nilfgaardians. Like, it seems like it's interesting because it's very Helm's Deep in that the way that the season one finale was sort of shown, it really did seem like, you know, the Brotherhood and their allies were really on the ropes. And we find out off screen that basically Yennefer was able to help, you know, keep their numbers down and give enough time for their allies to finally show up and help.
Yeah, which was, I think,
the Rohan full test. Riders.
People, yeah. So I do think that they end up, I don't want to say winning this battle, but like coming out a little bit more on top.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they also, I guess, acknowledge that they have captured somebody as well.
Yes. So I want to talk about Tisaya for a second, because we like briefly mentioned her, but it does seem like she's going to become a bit of a larger character. Can you talk to me about her relationship with Yennefer specifically? Because she seems... just like torn asunder with the idea of Yennefer.
I mean,
being
I think we get a little of this in season one, and I mean, there's not much to expand upon other than she sees her as almost like a daughter figure.
It's just interesting because I think the image I have of her burned in my
is
head
from
is,
the first couple
is from
episodes,
the first, where she's calling her piglet and like, but you
that's
know, essentially
like,
abusing her.
Yeah, but she's using tough love because she knows that's what will get to Yennefer, and then they both also are in the same world at that time where there's trust in the Brotherhood. Tisaya believes in it. She knows that it's what it is. Like, this is how magic works. This is controlled chaos. So she's trying to teach her how to be a good mage. And then as time goes on, they kind of meet in the middle a little bit more, realizing that, you know, maybe it's not quite right. So I do think that it is a bit like she's her favorite student and then became her mentor and then became her friend. And we also, there's a lot of time that we just don't see, you know, because there's like at least 30 years.
Like you say, there are decades where Yennefer is on that court.
Yeah.
No, I am excited, again, if we see more of Tisaya, that we get to see more of her power set.
Yeah.
My God, she was a badass in this episode. The first thing she does is she like puts her hand on a dead soldier and again, she gets to see like their final moments.
Yeah.
Seems like one poor guy like gets his face stomped on by a horse.
So I'm gonna equate this to what they do in Teen Wolf.
Okay,
which is they're able to,
which also
like...
includes vampires.
Yes. No.
It doesn't.
No.
I thought for some reason there were.
You're talking about the Vampire Diaries.
But I thought
they're
vampires
snuck
into that show.
They're different shows.
I just feel like nowadays you cannot vampire content without werewolf content and vice versa.
Vampire Diaries has werewolves.
But Teen Wolf does not have vampires.
As of right now, in my rewatch, it does not.
Well, there's one reason why one show lasted longer than the other one.
Okay, well, anyway, they stick their fingers into the neck of another, or their claws, and they can, like, see their memories.
Mm.
And I feel like that's what she was doing. She was, like, seeing through his eyes.
Yeah.
And so she was experiencing his final moments, which is pretty gross and cool at the same time.
Gross and cool is a good way to describe The Witcher in general.
Yeah.
So Tisea is super upset. You know, she's like screaming. She's on the brink of tears.
She basically thinks Yennefer's dead.
And her call of Yennefer is met by a surprising response of Yennefer. Mm-hmm. And through the mist, through the woods, it's a dark and... Speaking of Beauty and the Beast, we have...
The third time you've started singing Beauty and the Beast.
I mean, like, the story calls for it. I greatly apologize. There's going to be so many Beauty and the Beast references just because of the material. But here is the newly reunited slash first united Geralt and Ciri.
Yes.
And Ciri's on top of Roach. I'm very mad at ourselves for not talking anything about Roach last episode, because he's the best boy.
No, he's the best boy. Also, Roach is what Geralt calls all of his horses.
Oh, really?
So there's, and he prefers mares. So
it's not even like a Roach.
Oh, I mean, he's lived for like decades and decades. Roach can't live that long. Right, he's not a magical horse.
But is there not like a Roach 1, Roach 2 situation?
No, he just keeps calling them Roach.
It's easy to remember, I suppose.
We see here, this was like so funny for me because I was like, why is he walking so weird? And I like forgot that he had gotten hurt.
Yeah, he got bit by the zombie.
I was like, I don't like this new Geralt. And then I realized he was limping.
Well, we should also mention here, at least what I saw, and maybe, you know, maybe it's the hair. I think Freya Allen seemed like she matured significantly between seasons.
I mean, she definitely did, but I think her, first of all, she's wearing, and this is like me and my view, wearing a pretty horrendous wig.
Well, I also wonder, I feel like this is the first time we've really seen her let her hair down quite
she's
literally.
She's had
right?
it down a lot in season
really?
One.
I thought it was usually tied back.
No, especially when she's walking through the woods. Remember, she puts the mud in her hair.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of knuckle bones.
Yeah,
mode.
Knuckle bone is not her pretty. She had her hair down most of the season, but I will say it looked much more natural. This looked really like, I don't know, maybe she cut her hair or something, so they had to put a wig on her, very Jennifer Lawrence in The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. But I didn't love that, and I do think she had a lot of makeup on. Like, there are scenes where she's, like, in the firelight, and, like, especially when she comes out of the bath in the further scene, and I'm like, why is her face caked with makeup? It was so strange. But, yeah, she does look a little older.
Yeah, well, and maybe that also represents sort of, like, her emotional maturity as well. And we'll certainly get
For sure. She's not like a naive little girl anymore.
Yeah, again, it's very much like, you know, again, mapping it onto the Arya Stark of it all. She has yet to stab and kill anybody, but I do think even just what she's experienced being on the run has probably matured her a lot from that sheltered girl, you know,
I think she says it a few times throughout this episode that she doesn't want to feel helpless anymore. She feels like that's what she's really scared of is being helpless and not being able to do anything about her plight, you know, like being kidnapped by the Black Knight. She was like helpless, couldn't do anything. And that's what scares her.
Yeah. So we should mention, though, this scene is more about Geralt in this moment, because, again, Tisea sort of passes forward her mistaken judgment that Yennefer is dead. And we're going to get much more of a response from Geralt later on in the episode. I will say, in general, we talked about this last time, that Henry Cavill really made a big to-do on set about pushing for Geralt to have more dialogue. I would argue Geralt had more dialogue in this episode than half of season one.
Especially the scenes with Ciri. Like, I loved those scenes.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, the relationship from the books. So, like, you better have them talking. But Geralt, you know, responds Missy Elliott style, was it worth it to say? Clearly, in his own way, sort of internally mourning the fact that this woman that he literally, you know, is magically
gone. I feel like he gave up just a little quick on it here, because, like, isn't he supposed to, like, feel her? Like, you know what I mean?
Is it a thing where, like, he feels her spirit?
Yeah,
leave,
I don't
if that's
know.
The case?
Yeah, right? Like, wouldn't he know?
Would the djinn let him know?
But he's also a bit of a pessimist, I will say. He's probably like, well, I guess she's dead. She's dead.
Well, one of the highlights of this episode, and what makes me really excited for season two, is obviously Geralt and Ciri didn't meet each other until literally the last 10 seconds of season one.
Right.
And now they get to have scenes together, and I really like this dynamic.
I do too, and I think that she acts really well with him, as like the actress herself is doing, you know, doing a great job of like having this familiarity, this comfort level with basically a huge hunking guy. Like, he's a very intimidating person, so like to immediately establish that kind of rapport is like pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, well, what I like about it is you could very easily see a situation, right, where it's sort of like hapless damsel in distress and, like, her hardened bodyguard.
It's almost like she thinks he's funny. She's like, oh, Geralt.
See, that's the thing. Is like, what I love is they already have rapport. And again, I would imagine this
it's
is like...
that's so Geralt of
yeah,
you.
I would imagine this is only, you know, a little bit. I don't know how long it took to for
yeah,
them to
I mean, probably maybe like a week or so. Who knows?
I don't know, because I remember that where they ended up hanging out on that farmhouse, right? They were like, mm-hmm. oh, they're not going all the way up to Sodden to battle, but, like, they did. So I really like the fact that, like, they are kind of snippy with each other.
They are. I think that she's kind of reached this point in her maturity as well, where she's kind of just like, I'm not taking any more anyone's bullshit. Like,
like
you're being weird.
Look what I've been through. You know, she points out you don't sleep at all.
Yeah.
And Geralt replies, makes for fewer nightmares, except for apparently one about a, quote, way too friendly rock troll. I'm not sure what to...
I guess there were trolls mentioned in this.
Yeah, but I'm not too sure what to make of this one.
This is like a funny joke. It's like him just being like,
Now, is way too friendly, like, romantic?
He put stuff up his butt.
What?
I don't know.
All I can think of when I hear rock troll is either the rock biter from Neverending Story or the trolls from Frozen.
Yeah,
and I don't know which is worse.
Or I guess both are pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, you guys sort of pick your poison.
Yeah,
this is when you mentioned before. Ciri brings up the nightmare she had where she imagines she's back with the Black Knight.
Yeah,
Sintra's burning. And it's interesting, you know, Geralt tells her, you escaped, and she replies, I was lucky. And it's really interesting remembering this also in the spectrum mm-hmm. of Ciri, you know, having these powers.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how even in the midst where, like, she is not, I would say, you know, fully cognizant of them, but, like, there were a couple times where she used them, it still seems like she is doubting her abilities.
Yeah, well, she doesn't know what her abilities are, and neither does he. And that's one of the big things that he says, you know, when he's talking to Nivellyn about her, like, oh... Nivellyn's like, well, you're a witcher, and this is what witchers do. They kidnap kids and they turn them into witchers.
Pump them full of medicine, and occasionally they live, and then you make them into monsters.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, no, that's not going to happen to her. I want to help her with her powers and that kind of thing.
I want to adventure in the Grey White somewhere. I want it more than I can tell.
Sigh. so I think that that's probably a little bit more what is happening with her powers, where nobody really knows what they are, and that's what's kind of scary.
And so, obviously, I think the big thing to probably take away from their relationship is it really does seem like father and surrogate daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's his ward.
Yeah, to the point where Ciri's like, oh, well, I'm gonna go to Skellig, you know, I know people there. And Geralt's like, oh, you're not going anywhere near those rascally fellows.
No, he's like, well, he doesn't even say that. He's like, well, go to Skellig, but what's gonna happen? You're just gonna end up marrying some guy, and all he's gonna do is try to take your power. And, you know, they have good food, but do you really want that life? He's basically like saying, I've seen what happens to young women in this world, and I want better for you.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I'm gonna take care of you, baby girl.
There must be more than this provincial life.
I will kill you.
They're barely living a provincial life.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the makeshift war hospital. As you mentioned, a brief cameo from Triss. Not a great cameo for Triss, considering
I think they did that because
having some problems.
Yeah, I mean, we saw from the trailer for season 2 that she's a pretty big character in this season, I think, at at the Witcher headquarters and all of that, but she's basically not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And Tasea and
Viljaforge,
they heal her basically,
and they also meet with Artorias, I think,
Fringilla's uncle,
who was on the Brotherhood, and essentially, like, they have to spill the beans to him of, like...
No, he's not the worst. I shouldn't say that. No. He seems fine.
No, Stregobor is far and away the worst.
he probably died.
But, you know, Artorias is not great.
Yeah, he basically is like... He kind of, like, disavows his niece at
this
point.
Right, because they have to reveal to her, like, listen, your blood done screwed up. Like, she's joined with Nilfgaard.
And she's using chaos. She's not balancing chaos at all.
Right. And this is where the intel is revealed that, like you mentioned before, they were able to grab a prisoner to try to get information on what's going on with Nilfgaard. But, this is someone who, a few hints, he orchestrated the fall of Sindri.
Yeah.
He doesn't listen to generals.
Yeah.
But
who is he?
Who could it possibly be? What Nilfgaardians?
He reports directly to the Emperor. Mm-hmm. Like, he was like, okay. So they have Cahir, who we'll find out in a little bit,
is
the basement.
The only Nilfgaardian we know besides Fringilla. And Fringilla
has, who else would it be? Just
Fringilla
some random guy?
Fringilla has her hands full because, as I assumed, Yennefer wakes up. She's a prisoner, basically, on, like, a camp of Nilfgaardian wayward soldiers who essentially were able to escape the battle.
Yeah, she's just, she's on the run with them, I guess.
So good news for people who thought she was dead.
I hope nobody did, because it was pretty clear she wasn't.
Yeah, but some of our characters on the screen did it. So.
Yeah.
So this is also where we cut back to Geralt and Ciri. Geralt's going to do a little bit of an info dump on Kaer Morhen.
Yeah.
This
would have been, for me, I was like, oh, I've seen Nightmare of the Wolf.
Yes.
So I know all of this.
Yeah, so let's fill in a little bit of the blanks about Kaer Morhen for those who didn't. Though Geralt, again...
We'll get many of those blanks filled in next episode,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, which is called Kaer Morhen. Mm-hmm. Because this is also, like, you know, the City of Oz, right? Like, this is where Geralt wants to take Ciri. But it's essentially like The Witcher's winter lodging, right? Like,
yeah,
when it's cold outside and
rest up.
Yeah, because the monsters assumingly are not going to be.
Apparently,
as
they hibernate.
Yeah, or at least, like, they don't. It's too cold. They don't want to go out.
It's too chilly.
So, this is, yeah, the Witchers go in to heal. They replace armor and elixirs. I mean, it's basically, like, the closest thing the Witchers have to a home.
Yeah, it's their home base, for sure.
And it's also where, as we saw in Nightmare of the Wolf, that's where these Witchers are made. And Geralt
were
actually,
made.
Yeah, and he actually makes mention of an attack that nearly wiped them all out, and we saw that.
Yeah, we did see that in Nightmare of the Wolf.
Yeah, like basically an attempt that, yeah, I think essentially all the Witchers who were in Kaer Morhen at the time died except for Vesemir, and then like four little boys, one of which was Geralt.
Yes, exactly. And then they also weren't able to create more Witchers after that because all of the stuff was lost.
Mm-hmm.
There are more Witchers out there because there are other schools. You
right.
know, there's like the different sigils and stuff. But of the wolf Witchers, that's it.
So we bring up, I think I would say, the major theme of this episode. And I'm wondering of this season of, you know, what is a monster?
Yes.
Ciri...
That slaps you in the face later.
Yeah, because Ciri basically brings up, like, oh, were you attacked because you're different? And, you know, Geralt just sort of shrugs it off and says, sure. There's something I want to talk about here, because I know you have some lore behind it.
Do I?
They find an animal carcass, and Geralt grabs his knife, and Roach, you know, freaks out. And
yeah.
Geralt, like, twiddly diddlies his finger and does an axie, a calming sign. And I remember we were watching this and you said out loud, oh, I'm glad they're doing the signs.
Yeah, so it's how the Witchers use magic. There's, like, five major signs that they use to, like, harness magic and stuff. And then they are, I do recall them doing them a little bit in season one, but it was like, you know, when the episode we didn't talk about, actually, or the section that we kind of barely touched on, the Foltis stuff, when he seals the doors and he seals the thing, he does, like, they don't make it super clear with his hands.
Yeah, you don't have Triss being like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
what is that?
Exactly.
Obscure hand motion.
Yes, and it's hard to see. And then he also uses it earlier with Renfrey because he's trying to, like, convince her to not leave. It's like one of the signs that they use to, like, bend somebody's will.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, you know, when he blasts people back in the town square, that's one of them too. So, and you see him use that one later in this episode too. So I think they're just leaning into it a little harder. But yeah, their signs are like these hand signs that they use to, like, focus magic.
I thought it was just that aliens had finally arrived as one of the monsters and they could put out water to just defeat them.
Maybe.
Those were the signs I was thinking about. Swing away, Geralt, at the vampire's head.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before we can get into too much rotting meat, much to your displeasure, basically we just sort of yada yada to when they show up to the abandoned town from the opening. And
Well, yeah, because Geralt knows this town, and he's like, well, he's supposedly in this show, he knows this town. He's like, oh, there's a town up ahead with an inn. We can stay there.
And I feel like even if you don't know this town and, like, the doors are wide open and there's not a sound from it, you're suspicious.
That's what he said. He was like, something's not right. I don't even hear a dog barking. This place is, like, regardless of the Battle of Sodden, like, that wouldn't have affected an entire town, like, miles away.
So, luckily, he knows a guy. He pulls up to a manor. And as soon as he does, you know, here go all the windows and doors. They're shuttering, the banging, the doors close behind them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a haunted house. And from the doors bursts forward a beast.
A beast.
Tackles him to the ground. Geralt unsheathes his knife. And this beast replies, what the F are you doing here, you old whoreson?
Yeah, so I mean, this is fun because Nivellen is a character that I think a lot of people were excited to see. I will say that he does, I imagine, like, diehard fans out there are, like, not happy with the way he looks because he's described as being a bear with tusks of a boar.
Yeah, and I would say he looked
like a boar.
Like a boar, or I would say like with the Beast from Beauty and the Beast, right? It was very it was very much cat-like.
But he had like a snout. You know, like I think that people expected him to look like a bear. But he doesn't, and it's fine. Who cares?
I mean, listen, I would say that the actor, Christopher Hivju, who is probably most well known as Tormund Giantsbane from Game of Thrones, is a bit of a bear himself, so maybe he's represented on the inside there.
Yeah, and he does an amazing job here, because I think that his acting, it's like really hard to act when you're looking like that.
Well,
you know?
let's bring this up, because I'm still not sure. I've been watching the episode a couple times. Are they prosthetics or CGI or a combination of both?
I imagine it's a little bit of both, because when you look at his eyes, it does look very practical, but then I imagine the mouth is more CGI.
But specifically the nose for me, like, because the nose seemed to move independently a couple times. And I gotta think, like, unless there's some sort of weird animatronic situation going on
and
there, that has
to
be CGI.
With a practical like that, where you have a mouth that's extended, there's no way it would move like that. Like, you can't, you can't do that. So I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Which
but
is good, because, like, again,
it gives it more realism.
Look at Dan Stevens in Beauty and the Beast to know how CGI is very, like, uncanny valley. So let's talk about Nivellen here, because at least in the initial approach, he is this sort of, like, goofy yet lovable cur.
I think he is that.
Yeah. Well, listen, we'll talk about his maybe darker side later on. But he has magic, and I love...
He doesn't... So he actually doesn't have magic. Oh. It's his curse that has magic. The curse, basically, the house provides for him. The house will do whatever he says.
You mean, like, household objects come to life and follow his orders?
Perhaps. But it's basically, like, if he wants something, the house will give it to him.
But what I love about it, though, is how...
maybe in this he's like has magic, but according to the book.
But what I find so interesting is that I find the magic that Nivellen uses, so it's an odd word to use, but like clumsy. And I love that it's not like perfectly magic. Like when he makes the bathtub drop out of the sky, it like falls awkwardly and water splashes out.
And I think that's the answer to that is that he's not doing it. He's asking the house to do it. So the house is like, bleh, bath.
Yeah, but he still shows off, right? Like later on when he's like does a light show for Geralt lights the candles down the hallway.
Yeah.
I love the sort of Be Our Guest-esque moment all the food just drops onto the table messily.
Well, and I think he's also gotten to the point where he's perfected some of these like requests too, you know, where he can like say something and, you know, like make something happen, like a bathtub or, you know, whatever, and it's just like he wants it here and he wants it now. There's bathtub.
Yeah, so Nivellen, of course, is welcoming Geralt in with open arms. Mm-hmm. It's been about 13
years. Old friend, apparently.
Yeah, and we'll talk about their origin story later, but Geralt is all business of like, no, we're just staying the night.
Yeah.
He's still joking around with Nivellen. I love the, you want to tell me what happened? That's a tale requiring of wine. How about you? That's a tale requiring of a wine cellar.
Yeah, exactly.
Again,
so I think,
like, to your point, if people were worrying about this not being comedic, there's some fun Geralt one-liners here.
There are. And I think right off the bat, Geralt is a little suspicious because he passed that town where nobody was in it. So he's not quite sure what's going on. And he's actually surprised to see Nivellen. So I think that, you know, he is a little bit on edge. And so he doesn't want to take a bath. He kind of wants to keep an eye on Ciri. Like, he doesn't want to, like, stray too far. And Nivellen's trying to put him at ease because he's hiding something.
Yeah. But he's trying to be like, oh, you're my friend. Come stay in my house. Ciri is buying it hook, line, and sinker, right?
There's no reason she shouldn't.
She takes the bath, but something is a bit of a miss when she hears a little skitter skitter from above. She pays no mind to it because she's distracted by looking over and seeing a new white gown.
Yeah, like a dress. It's a white dress.
Should have been a yellow ball gown.
Get over it. she sees this white dress, assuming Nivellen put it out for her, but we're sort of panned up to the ceiling at this point, and we see what can only be described as something from my nightmares. Like, truly... so scary to me.
Two glowing eyes, essentially.
And a pale-ass face.
Yeah,
like,
from a hole in the ceiling.
Oh, I, like, got shivers when I saw it. I was like, nope, no, 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 no.
We'll talk about it later on, but, like, what they do with the monster in this episode is really unbelievable.
Well, and you know me. I often have dreams where things are coming from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. Cameras, bugs. One of my favorite, like, lucid dreams that I ever have, like, between wake, not favorite, but, like, one of the ones that I find so weird.
You have a top three lucid dreams.
One of the ones I find so weird is that I'll be, like, half awake, half asleep, and, like, some sort of, like, camera is coming down from the ceiling, and, like, I can't move.
And I'm the reality TV fan in the family.
It's not reality TV. It's surveillance.
I mean, what's the difference?
Sometimes it's not even a camera. Sometimes it's like a big open like picture frame and there's like somebody like peering through it.
Oh, interesting.
It's all just like who's
watching me.
That's
something I'd like the haunted mansion. Well, hopefully, I don't know. Hopefully not. Hopefully Venera is not going to show up in your dreams anytime soon.
But yeah, so we move on from her pretty quickly because we just wanted a little taste.
Yeah. Speaking of a little taste, they eat.
Dinner time.
They're able to get the story from Nivellen as to how him and Geralt met. Essentially, Nivellen's father had hired Geralt to clear out an infestation of... So they say Wyvern, you know, I, as someone who has, you know, been on the D&D path for the past few years, I always thought it was Wyvern, so I guess, you know, you learn something new every day.
I don't think it matters. I think people say it either way. Yeah, it's a mythical creature.
Yes, but Nivellen, you know, tried to prove he was the man of the household by trying to kill one first. He sort of got himself in a lot of hot water. A
little pickle.
Geralt saved his life, killed the Wyverns, and was like, oh, you take the credit for it. It's fine. I don't care. I'm getting paid either way.
Yeah. And so he feels like he like doesn't owe Geralt, but like it was the only good time he ever had with his father. But, you know, they also talk a little bit about he tries to get stuff out of Geralt and Geralt's like, never mind.
Yeah. Well, Nivellen then decides to further open up and talk about his curse.
Why he's been cursed.
Yes. See, there was an old woman at the door and he knocked and he wasn't nice to her.
No.
We will find out he does something, I think, much more deserving of his curse than that prince from Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. And so basically what he tells Geralt here is that him and his buddies were just basically sacking a temple, like just mischief.
They were high on
graffiti.
Mushrooms.
It just like doing like bullshit, and the priestess was like, oh yeah, this is my temple,
but you are going to live like this forever,
exactly,
unless blah 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 love and blood.
Yeah he sort of like says that too. He's like, I don't know, she said something about love and blood.
Again,
I can't remember.
He was very high on mushrooms at the time, so it's a good excuse,
I guess. But
Geralt, always the practical person, right? He's like, well, clearly there's a cure.
Yeah, he's like, clearly, and then that's when Nivellen's like, I don't know, she said something about love and blood.
But also, to bring things back to a pretty dark place, right? I mean, he's like, well, I have tried to quote-unquote end it multiple times, but I keep coming back.
Yeah, so basically, he's in this position where he cannot die, he must live forever as this beast.
And specifically, the way he phrases it is that he was cursed to live forever alone.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if that's, like, just due to your hideous visage, is it, like, an actual...
I think so. I think that's what he thinks, because
clearly
the cure for the curse is somebody who loves you and then you kill.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about another piece of lore that gets brought in here. The Wild Hunt, because, you know, as a video game fan of The Witcher, my ears certainly perked up. That is the name of the third game of The Witcher, the most recently released one. Talk to me about this idea of the Wild Hunt. It seems like we're sort of getting the continent's version of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. It's very much so the Ring Race from Lord of the Rings. It's this big bad. It's out there. I don't know what the video games do with it, but basically, it's like it's always talked about as like this looming threat.
Yeah, and Nivellen claims he saw it. Apparently, Ciri's grandfather claimed that he saw the Wild Hunt when they were fighting Nilfgaard.
Yeah, and so the Wild Hunt terminology is a Norse myth. Uh-huh. So this is something I'm familiar with from reading a ton of young adult fiction about fairies. Don't at me. basically what it is that there is like a ghost. Like these are like I don't even know how to describe it, but
they're like ghost riders.
Yeah, they basically go to battlefields and pick up souls.
Ghost riders in the sky, I think.
Sure. But they're basically, like ghost riders, and they go from like battle to battle, like picking up like fallen soldiers and making them part of the Wild Hunt.
Interesting.
It's like an omen. If you see it, it's like an omen of like bad shit.
So it's interesting because in the first season, you know, we talked about something that I really enjoyed about The Witcher was that unlike some other fantasy series, there wasn't like this big, you know, almost like MacGuffin-esque end of days, you know, the world is in danger because of this threat, like the form of the White Walkers. Nivellen is trying to sort of disprove that point, right? He's like, oh no, something's happening. You know, Sodden is just a complete wasteland. It's the end of days. And Carol just Very curtly replies, I've lived through a whole dark age and three supposed end of days. It's all horse shit.
Yeah, no, and I agree with him. I mean, it's like, if you're a Witcher, like, and you've seen all of that, it's like really hard for you to see what happened at Sodden as anything significant at all.
I mean, I think it's relatable for us. How many years have we lived through that so many cults have declared, like, between 2000 and, like,
yeah, 2011? Yeah, supposed end
Rapture,
of days.
2012, my
Talk
calendar.
About the leftovers.
Yeah, exactly. But Nivellen, I think, sets up maybe the direction the world is going in, right, when he says it's acting in its own strange accord these days, far outside the reach of kings and men.
Yeah, so, and I think this is, like, in line with the Lord of the Rings sort of idea that there are ages of the earth. There are ebbs and flows. There are changes. Nothing is ever stagnant or stays the same. So, you know, there were the different spheres, and then there was the conjunction of the spheres, and now something else is happening where, you know, they're going to have to evolve and change to meet it. So he's not wrong, but he's also, like, being a little dramatic.
So Ciri decides to lighten up the mood, right? She brings up, oh, yeah, I heard some scratching before. Do you have a cat? And he goes, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Her name's Verena, but she's very shy, so you'll probably never see her.
In fact, don't look for her. Don't even go near her if you do see her.
Human eyes just think it's a cat. It's just a really big cat.
Mm-hmm.
A really big, pale cat.
He's, like, super suspicious here when he says that. Like, if I were Geralt, like, and I think he does immediately, like, kind of perk up, like, okay, Nivellen, like, what's up with you?
My cat loves to crawl on the ceiling and drink blood.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally turn into a bat. So meanwhile, Nivellen's gonna put on a show for Ciri. Geralt's gonna go scout the place. Let's continue on the dark theme and talk about Cahir's interrogation.
Yeah, so we find out that it's Cahir that they have downstairs, and Taseya, on her warpath, basically goes down and tortures the F out of him.
Yeah, it's weird because, again, this is all, there's no effects done, right? It's purely just, like, her touching him and he wails. Well, and good on the actor who plays Cahir for, like, playing it so well.
Yeah, and Frangilla's uncle is, I forget his name, I've never, and you know what, I'm not gonna remember it.
Yeah, because he doesn't deserve that.
Old man sorcerer, basically.
OMS.
OMS. Even reminds her before she goes down to interrogate him that they have a code. Like, we have a code, but I think she's off that path now.
Yeah, she very much is like, hey, you know what, whatever.
They did
it,
so we're going to do it. You know, like.
But Cahir's still on his bullshit, right? He's like, no, but the white flame will cleanse us all. I won't say anything. And so Taseya's like, great, I'm going to F your mind right now.
Yeah, like, I'm going to make you scream so loudly that you're going to die.
Like, yeah, so, well, because she starts off by saying, like, well, it's not in my nature to be, listen, I'm a nice person, but, like, you got someone who really matters to me, so sorry, I'm going to take your knowledge and your memories, and I'm going to, I think she says, basically, if any grooves in your brain are left, I'm going to plow them further.
Yes, exactly.
And also, like, the Foley is really good because we hear, like, crunching and shrieking, and so it really implies, like,
she is effing his brain up.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an internal thing or almost like a literal lobotomy.
Yeah, a little bit of both. But yeah, I mean, she's acting from a place of, like, total grief. Like, she's like distraught about Yennefer, distraught about the whole thing. Like, she's not herself, I would say.
So let's go to where Yennefer actually is.
Yes.
So now that Yennefer has sort of gotten her bearings, she, in true Yennefer fashion, she's going to bring some sass.
Yeah, of course. She's just, like, totally, like, she's approaching this being captured thing with, like, such nonchalance. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's what I love about the character. And maybe it's because, like, she gained such, I don't know, like, a calcified view of the world when she spent all those years on court, that she's like, F it. I can do whatever I want. I'm really magic.
And she's also, I think, to a place in her existence where if she dies, she dies. You know, like, I'm not sure she cares that much.
But I actually really like, and I'm glad we'll see more of it, hopefully, this Yennefer Frangilla dynamic, because it is so snippy with
each
snippy. Other.
Right? And I think that they've probably always been a little bit like this,
right,
too.
Because they're classmates.
Yeah.
And, because it's basically like, Frangilla's like, oh, well, too bad, you know, Yennefer complains about the food that she magicked for her. And she's like, well, listen, if you wouldn't waste your chaos on frivolous nonsense. And Yennefer's like, well, I just, like, blasted half of your army with all that frivolous nonsense.
Exactly.
And Frangilla replies like, well, you're here right now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's true. I'm just like, well, yeah, I did capture you.
So despite being not in a position of power, Yennefer is going to kind of taunt Frangilla here, basically saying, listen, I'm assuming you're on the run because you done lost and hard. But Frangilla still tries to, like, regain her composure and says, no, Sodden was just the raindrop before the storm.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly where this is going with all the Nilfgaard stuff, because it is sort of, like, probably built up in some of the books I haven't read as well. But obviously that's going to be a big part of the season.
We get a little bit of a reference to it of, I can't remember if the Emperor Emir is his name.
Yes.
Was he name dropped in season one?
He was, because that's who Kahir is.
I mean, that's the White Flame.
Yeah,
right?
That's the White Flame. He's the guy.
Sort of like the, for Game of Thrones fans, like the Azor Ahai.
Uh-huh.
Sort of like the prince who was promised, in
exactly.
a way.
And so they definitely are, you know, following this pretty aggressively.
Yeah. Then they sort of like bicker back and forth where, you know, Fringilla's like, well, the Brotherhood will never have you back because you tapped into fire magic. You broke the rules. And Yennefer's like, well, joke's on you. You know, my magical mother figure told me to do that.
Yeah, the head of Eretusa said
I'm gonna
to do it.
I'm going to be hailed as the conquering hero for saving the day.
Yeah, I mean, she's not wrong.
And also, I do love her calling Nilfgaard Shitguard. Like, the very fun, stupid nickname.
It is a stupid
it's
nickname.
Very childish.
It's like calling somebody a butthead.
Yeah, it really is. Like,
hey, Fringilla, you're a big butthead.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I'm surprised you're able to do any magic considering that butt you have for a head.
Yeah, sticks and stones, man.
Yeah, but words are going to go in your butthead.
Butthead.
So Nivellen uses a fun little, again, I'll describe it as like a shadow carousel thing to tell a story. You know what this reminded me of? And we watched this, but I'd be curious
yeah, it's the same thing. It's the
if
same
anyone
thing.
Else
I know exactly
this.
What you're going to say.
The Dark Crystal series on Netflix specifically. Really well done.
Yeah.
Like, very, very well done, and featuring a staggering amount of voice talent as well.
I loved it.
But there was one episode that was really fun where they did sort of a lore dump on the world by having two characters, which I think were played by Andy Samberg and Bill Hader, if I recall, doing a shadow puppet play.
Yeah.
And that sort of is what we got here.
And this is also something that, like, in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, when they do the story of the Deathly Hallows, they do, like, a bit of a shadow puppet play there. But this is a common thing that existed pre-electricity, these types of lanterns that had spinning capability and then images on them, kind of like a like for kids and stuff.
Yeah.
The one that comes to mind is from the hit movie Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, yeah.
Where the little boy gets killed.
Yeah. you had me watch that recently for the very first time during Halloween.
And it was good, wasn't it?
It was very fun. I thought it would be spookier.
It's not.
It's not as spooky.
It's a little silly.
It has Christopher Walken as the Headless Horseman.
Exactly. It's a little silly.
Yeah. So we should mention here a little bit of the story being told, right?
Yeah.
It's the tale of a doomed young elven warrior and a human mage. They were never meant to fall in love.
Yes, exactly.
Yet
very
they did.
Like
it's Romeo and Juliet, and in a similar way, it ends in death for both of them.
Exactly.
Here's my hot take / prediction. I know nothing about this, so don't. I'm not going to even look at you for a reaction. But let me put this out here. I think this is a story about Ciri's elders. I think one reason why her and her mother Petroker, or whatever her name was, were able to possess power is because there is, much like Yennefer, there is elven blood in them, and this is a story that sort of, much like how Ciri is going to bring up later, Mousesack told me this story about this hedgehog man. Basically, all the stories
is nobody telling her anything that's
about
true.
People in her life, and she doesn't realize it.
Well, we shall see.
We shall see. This is when Geralt's also going to like vent to Roach, right?
Yes.
Basically, being like, oh, this stupid girl, like, does all the opposite of things that I want her to do.
Well, and I think that that's also something to mention, and they have a bit of a heart-to-heart at the end of the episode, but, like, she doesn't necessarily trust him fully yet. Mm-hmm. I think she's put a lot of trust in this person.
Or at least doesn't trust him to the point where she should follow every single order that he gives her.
Yeah, she's not 100% sure that she thinks he has her best interests at heart, but he's not the be-all, end-all. She's like, I still have opinions, and I think I could be right. And, you know, like, she needs to learn that, like, he has seen the world. He might know a little bit more than you.
Mm-hmm.
You tween.
So Nivellen is going to reveal, again, a bit more of a dark turn to his curse. He basically infers that the day he turned into a monster, he killed all of his servants.
Yeah, because he had no control and he didn't know what had happened.
Yeah, and he says, I deserve my destiny. And I love this idea that, again, destiny sort of cuts both ways. It obviously has a very positive connotation with Ciri and Geralt, but sometimes it can't. Sometimes, you know, destiny is you're meant to live this monster alone and bedding a vampire.
This is how I feel about people that commit murder and go to jail, and how I feel about if you make a mistake, you kind of just have to, like, commit to it because that's your destiny.
Yes and your murder
and now go to jail and live with it.
Yeah. So as Nivellen takes Ciri to bed, though,
you know, like, rehabilitate yourself, blah blah blah, blah.
Exactly. There's a really interesting conversation here, though, where she's like, listen, you're not as bad as you make yourself out to be. You obviously didn't mean to do this, but he's very much, you know.
Yeah, sometimes she doesn't know the whole story.
Sometimes I think I'm a man, but I know who I really am. And this makes it such an interesting character because, obviously, again, there's going to be more to the story that we'll find out later on, but there is clearly shame that this character feels.
Yeah, because I do think there's something to be said, and this is, like, maybe my opinion about how humanity is, how, you know, it's a grayscale. There is no black and white, and I think that that's something that Geralt is going to come to terms with a little bit at the end of this episode, because for him, it's monster, no monster.
Yep.
And, you know, in the world that we live in, sometimes there are people that believe, like, you do something bad, like, there's no coming back from it. Whereas I don't know if that's true. You know, I think that, you know, there is the capability of change. And I don't think that we live, like, this static life. I mean, obviously, there are scales to that. And, you know, there should be restrictions. But, you know, I do think that he's somebody who says, like, no, I'm a bad person, and I recognize that. Not like, no, it's fine that I do this. That's just who I am. You know what I mean? Like, he sees it as something bad.
As Nivellen brings up, part of sort of the Witcher training regimen is to try to have them divorce emotions so they can just be relentless killing machines. And so it's almost Terminator-esque in that Geralt is like, okay, monster, kill. But as Ciri points out here, the concept of a monster is very ubiquitous.
Yes.
For example,
what is a monster?
She watched a whole army charge in, kill her family, and burn their homes to the ground. By comparison, they look like the monsters in comparison to the actual monster.
Yeah, and I think also she's, and this is an interesting part of how she's involved in the story now, because I guess we should talk about this. The Bruxa comes to visit her in the night. And it is the most horrifying thing I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, well, actually, let's put pause on that because we do have the drinking game first.
Right. But I was just going to, the one thing I was going to say was, like, she's scared to, that she could be a monster because she has powers.
Right. And also this idea as well of, as she'll talk about later, like, she feels like she has her own curse in a way that death seems to follow her everywhere. Right.
She's jinxed.
Right, exactly. So Geralt is going to do a little Nancy Drewing.
Yeah.
He finds footprints in the snow.
He's suspicious.
Yeah, he finds footprints in the snow and suddenly they stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so
going towards the village.
Yeah, and so he's going to try to dig a little deeper with Nivellen. He's going to play a drinking game of, let's throw daggers at a portrait of your father. If it doesn't hit his face, whoever threw the dagger has to tell the truth.
Yeah, and, like, this should be easy for Geralt because he's a massively good shot, but it ends up that Nivellen has actually put, like, knives out that are, like, trick knives.
Knives out. But yeah. It's such a twist in so many ways. It's interesting, though, because my initial read when I watched the scene was that I thought Geralt was purposely missing his shots. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, like, a long con almost to get him in a susceptible place. And then, you know, then maybe Geralt
makes
his
move. Well, so I think, like, when he misses the first one, he's like, ah, so I missed. Let me tell him a truth. That might butter him up a little bit. And then he keeps missing. And you can see that it's, like, kind of bugging him because Nivellen keeps hitting. And he's like, I'm not getting anything out of him.
Yeah, and it's interesting because what Geralt's able to do is, like, listen, he's not going to break the rules of the drinking game. He is going to tell the truth, but he won't tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, right?
Exactly.
Like, the first question he gets asked is, how did you find yourself with a young girl? And he says, I promised her grandmother before she died.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not untrue. And he's going to bring up the law of surprise later, but obviously, you know, Geralt's MO right now is to not reveal who Ciri is. It's interesting, earlier on when I mentioned, you know, when Ciri talked about her grandfather with the Wild Hunt, he basically is like, oh, no, but he's a drunk, and sort of gives her a look of, like, do not say who your parents and grandparents are.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if they find out your Princess Cirilla, you're going to be sold off.
Yeah, exactly. He understands her status in the world is a little bit fraught at the moment.
Well, I mean, listen, what she just experienced, right? Her own knucklebones friends wanted to sell her out for money.
And possibly rape her, so.
Yeah. So
good times.
We find out some more stuff here, right, Geralt? And his second shot, what's his plan? Keep her alive.
I just thought of something really terrible. They wanted to knuckle bone her.
Oh.
That's awful. Should we cut that out?
No, we're keeping it in. Look, of all the people who are saying we should keep it in, I think it makes most sense. But let me just say that did not come from me. You heard it from another
person. I think it did come from you into my brain, and then I had to say it.
Yeah, this is my to say. I held my hands to your brain and, like, incepted the idea.
Or what the Bruxa does to Ciri and just starts talking to her inside her head.
Yes, exactly. So the third shot, basically, you know, Nivellen's like, how did you get here? You know, who basically softened you up to take on this girl as his destiny? And Geralt says, Yennefer of Vengerberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he says, like, well, you love her. And then he says, like, yeah, she's, and he's like, where is she now? And he says, oh, she's dead. And then he says, how long ago did it happen? And he's like 3 days.
Yeah. And Velen's like, why are you not heartbroken? And Geralt simply replies, like, who says I'm not?
No, people have grief in different ways.
Exactly. Especially someone like Geralt, who, despite Henry Cavill's,
that's how I would react.
Just internalize everything.
I do. Like, you know what I mean? Much, and then all of a sudden I explode. It's delightful.
It's very much like just a grenade that a pin might be pulled out at any time.
You never know. Keeping you on your toes, Bloom.
Well, let's cut to Yennefer proper. This is Yennefer's medieval woke line of the episode. Horses, whores, and mages, all useful till we're not.
Yeah, it's true.
Again,
I think she's always felt that way, though. You know, like, especially being jaded, being in that court where she could, like, make nothing happen. Just do my bidding and be gone.
Yeah, so basically, like, Yennefer tries to convince Fringilla, hey, come on and join the North. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got cookies. You can redeem yourself. But Fringilla is committed to the cause. In fact, she tells Yennefer, like, we did not come north to conquer, but liberate.
Yeah, so she's drinking the Kool-Aid. Like, I think that at first we weren't 100% sure where Fringilla was coming from, whether or not it was, like, a power thing or a, you know, commitment to her court thing or just, like, felt like, you know, she wanted to be important, but I think she believes in the white flame.
Well, not only that, I think her and Yennefer, though, see a bit eye to eye, right? The whole horseshoe thing that, you know, opposite ends ends up curling surprisingly together of, you know, Fringilla is anti-brotherhood, obviously, saying they make us pawns that are used to control kingdoms. And though Yennefer did end up leaving her assignment, like, she doesn't disagree, I don't think.
She doesn't disagree with that, but she
was the one to speak up against the Brotherhood for being neutral in the Nilfgaard stuff.
Yeah, so she thinks that there's something wrong with the Brotherhood, but she doesn't think the way to go about it is joining a cult.
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah. That's the thing, is, like, cut your hair, maybe, like, write
your legislation.
Write poetry, but, like, don't join a cult. Yeah. Don't join a murder cult.
Don't join a murder cult that believes in what can only be described as Jesus.
Yeah, so we should mention here, we talked about this a lot before, but, like, this is where it gets, you know, Nivellen sort of opens up about the process of making witchers. Geralt pulls a knife out of his boot and reveals that he knew Nivellen was using magic knives the whole time. And Nivellen just really sketchily skirts the issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, what are you hiding? He's like, I've got to go to the bathroom.
He says, I've got to drain the snake and hit the sheets.
Do you think the curse means there's a snake down there?
No.
I would not be surprised.
He has a big pig penis.
Let me just say again, that did not come from me.
Sorry, it's 9 o'clock at night on a Thursday, baby.
And that's when you get spicy.
Always.
Well, speaking of getting spicy, here we go. It's Verena. Obviously, vampires in pop culture are personified in many ways. Everything from...
Yeah, I'm surprised, actually, you didn't get vampire from
I got Demented Girl from The Grudge initially, because here is someone crawling on the ceiling.
And... Yeah, that part for sure. But as soon as she gets up close to her, she has a very vampire look to her.
No, I mean, again, like, going back to The Grudge or The Ring, like, there could be, like, demented, you know, afterlife spirits.
I also don't think you've seen a lot of vampire movies. No, like, Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like,
is that the one with Gary Oldman?
Yeah. You know, there are these, like, tall, like, pale, for lack of a better term, bitches in white dresses. So she definitely personifies that. But she does this, like, the way they filmed it.
Yeah, so let's talk about this, because it's so...
It was very disturbing.
I would imagine the way that they filmed it, honestly, was that they played her in fast motion.
Yes.
And everything else in 1X.
But it was, like, fast, fast, slow. Fast, fast, slow.
Yeah, so
it
almost... Fast, fast, slow. Initially, I thought it was almost like stock motion, where it was very
jerky. Yeah, it was
jerky.
Like jerky, yeah.
Yeah, where she would speed up and then slow down, and then speed up and slow down. I mean, clearly this is just, like, the creepiness of the monster, but... I just thought it was incredibly well done with just how weird it was.
So she's been peeping on Ciri.
She was the one who left her the dress.
Yeah, so she comes in and is just, like, creeping on her, like, as if she's her, like, new pet.
Yeah.
Like, she's petting her. She's, like, saying, like, oh, you're different, too. So
yeah,
she clearly...
I'm not you, but I am like you.
Yeah, so I think that she doesn't immediately attack and feed on Ciri because she, first of all, has been feeding on Nivellen with
And so she's like, hey, new blood, quite literally.
No, but I mean, she's been feeding on Nivellen with the intent for their, like, basically goal is so that she wouldn't go feed on other people and murder towns again.
Yeah.
But she also doesn't, I don't think, attack Ciri because Ciri has is different. She's, you know, like, I don't think she would attack the Witcher.
I smell something different on you almost.
Yeah, and she knows that she can hear her in her head, which is, like, creepy. They use a weird tone and a weird voice for that one, too.
Yeah, to communicate that, like, just because her lips aren't moving, she can steer hear her. I mean, it's interesting. I also really like this dialogue where, you know, the Verena says, "Are you a monster because you're different?" And Ciri, again, beating that drum, says, "Monsters do bad things to people." And Verena replies, "Humans do bad things to everybody."
Yeah, it's
so again,
true.
Like, it's very much that environmental movie scourge in the 90s, right? Of like, the true enemy is man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is. But I also think it's I don't want to say a little strange, but I don't know if maybe Ciri's just desensitized, like she's just seen a lot. But the fact that
she's a lot of shit, Verena.
The fact that she doesn't immediately scream when she wakes up and that, like, that thing is in her face. Like, I'm sorry, you don't just immediately scream? Wouldn't you?
I mean, I would.
You
would
scream a lot.
I'm very easily startled. So, like, if you woke me up,
my reaction would be like, what the fuck? Like,
I would jump out of bed. I would shriek.
So if you're telling me that I shouldn't just tap you on the shoulder in the middle of the night with my hair just, like, really, like, down and scraggly in front of me and just, like, go.
Yeah, and you definitely shouldn't, like, move in
jerk
weird
my head around and like
crawl on the ceiling.
I shouldn't crawl on the ceiling.
Not this time.
Okay.
Do
it
for a little while before I get that
image
out of my head. So we basically, like, now everything is starting to come to reality, right? Geralt goes into town and this is when he finds the people from the cold opening and he realizes that the reason why the tracks stop is because the monster flies. And this is where he puts two and two together that there's a Bruxa in this house.
There's a Bruxa in the house, which is a little bit different than the book. In the book, he comes to the conclusion that it's something else. Mm-hmm. And so he ends up leaving. And then he returns because there are a few things that Bruxas are known for as a vampire, like, that can walk in the light, that drinks blood.
Garlic.
There's also something that they don't do in this, which I'm actually pretty glad because I think it would come off very cheesy. But Bruxas are known for singing after they feed.
Oh, interesting.
And so in the book, like, I only know this because I just read this one, too. Yeah. But it was like, she's sitting on a statue of a dolphin in the front of the house singing. And that's when Geralt comes upon her at the end where right before he kills her. But yeah, they sing when they had a nice dinner and they...
Don't we all?
Jaunty tune. Very siren-like. You know?
But like the opposite of sirens, right? Yeah. Like, you're not drawing anyone in. You just ate, so you don't need to draw anyone in anymore.
But yeah, so he runs back to the house.
And this is where we get our first downed elixir. This one lasts him a pretty long time.
Well, first he immediately goes to Ciri and says, "Stay on Roach."
Yeah, get to Roach, and like as soon as you know,
if anybody comes out of the house that isn't me, flee and ride for your life.
I really like the music here. Like,
me too. It was good.
The soundtrack, we haven't spoken about it enough. Like, it really combines that medieval score you would imagine with this type of stuff, but like almost this one, I think, like, kind of put a beat behind it.
Yeah, it was like drum bass.
Yeah, like, like a heartbeat, if you will.
Yeah,
and so we see he spies Vereen. He walks in on the act.
Yeah, so she is num-num-numming on Nivellen.
Yeah, drinking Nivellen's blood, and we see not the true form of Verena. We'll get that in a little bit, but we see Verena's got a lot of teeth in so many
ways. Yeah, she has like two rows of teeth,
and she has almost like Ciri style the ability to blast someone back and paralyze.
Yeah, it's
her
a sonic blast, if you must know.
Yes, good on Geralt, you know, I guess the heightened senses from the elixir. She disappears into the ceiling. He's able to find her and essentially poke her out.
Yeah, with the knife. Yeah, so the other thing to know about a Bruxa is they can't be killed by steel. They can only be killed by silver, which is, you know, like, I think...
Very werewolf-esque, actually.
Yeah. But I don't actually think that's what happens at the end. I think she just gets her head cut off.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the exact same ending happens with the whole, like, spike, and then Geralt cuts her head off before she can attack Nivellen.
Yeah, so... Anyway, they tumble outside.
They take it outside, folks. Well, it's also interesting, though, because so Geralt throws Verena out the window several times over the course of this fight.
And
think that it's over. But then as Ciri walks up to her, like, her eyes snap open and she goes, "He hurt me." And we just hear crunch, crunch, crunch.
Yeah, it was so gross.
I would say this woman
is
jointed, quadruple jointed. I don't even know.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, Ciri walks up to her and Geralt's like, "No, like, stop. Go back to Roach. Like, what are you doing?" And this is like an instance of her not really paying attention to him.
Yeah, but also Verena, like, has this odd way of broaching the line between, like, nice and threatening, where she tells Siri, you know, I can't help you if you run. I don't want to hurt you.
Well, I think that that's her killer instinct.
Right, but I think that there's also this ability. Yeah,
we're
like, but she's trying to hold it back to your
point,
right?
She's trying to, like, and this is what Nevillain has been trying to teach her, is like, I will let you feed on me if you restrain yourself. So she's been like, I don't want to hurt you, but I am, this is my nature. So if you run, like, my instinct is going to kick in and I'm going to go after you.
So we get a fight here. Geralt does something really cool where, I don't know, so she hits him with the sonic blast.
Yes.
And then he
uses a hand sign.
Well, I was gonna say, like, I don't know if he Gambit style, like, used her energy against her.
I think a little bit of both.
Yeah, but that'd be cool if he was able to do that.
I think he, like, matches it.
Yeah. But,
very much so, Harry Potter and Voldemort.
Yeah, it's very much.
Wand.
He did Expelliarmus.
Yeah, yes, against Voldemort's curse, and it's the twin cores.
Yes, exactly. And then Geralt saw all the people who died come to life and be like, "Take me to my dad."
Yeah, uh-huh.
Geralt.
Uh-huh.
So Verena all of a sudden just transforms into a giant ass bat creature.
Yeah. So this is like, I mean, this is something that is, like, fine. Like, we needed to see it, but it was also very, very quick. I was getting nauseous watching this bit.
Well, yeah, because she does this thing where she'll, like, fly away, come back and attack, almost like warming up.
Almost like a bat.
Yeah. Well, what I love, though, I love the sound.
Because bats do that. Like, if you ever see a bat, like, it'll bounce around you, you know?
I don't have much bat experience.
You remember that episode of The Office with the bat in the ceiling?
I suppose so, but all I think about is Meredith getting it in the garbage bag on her head, which is a very, you know, not a normal situation. I really like, though, in the sound design, to your point of this being a bat creature, Geralt listens for the clicking noises and uses that to determine how close she is. It's his own version of echolocation.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's this really fun moment where, like, he ducks out of the way just in time for her to sail right over him, knock herself out on the statue, and turn back into her human form.
Yeah, her naked human form.
Yes, exactly. But, like, Siri, you know, is like, oh, she's cold. Let's put a cloak on her.
I know, because she sees her as not a monster.
As like a confused,
like a troubled youth.
There's a soul in there, basically. Like, I think her viewpoint at this point is like, Geralt's just
can save her.
Yeah, remorseless killing machine. I don't want any more death around me. I can save her.
Yeah.
But here, Nevillain is the one to stab her.
Yeah, because she immediately pops up and is going to go after Siri, and Nevillain rams her through.
She grabs her, right? She's like, I'll rip out her throat if you come near here.
Yeah.
And Nevillain stabs her. Again, this is death fake out number two.
Yeah.
But Verena goes, she turns her full body around.
Yeah, that was disgusting.
Including her head. And I know this is from the story as well. Drags herself,
pulls herself to
down
him,
this pipe.
Saying, I love you.
Yeah, further stabbing herself to like attack Nevillain, and Geralt cuts her head off.
Yeah, but before that, she tells Nevillain that she loves him.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is love and blood.
Love, yep. And but though before she dies, much like, I don't know, a chicken, her head lives for a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
She telepathically tells Siri, he'll come for you too.
Yeah.
And she bursts into flames.
Which I think is like an extra little level of nuance here. The idea that Siri thinks is going to start thinking herself a monster, and that the Witchers kill monsters. Where is her allegiance? Like, who should she trust? All that sort of stuff. But
yeah, it's tough. I really hope it doesn't lead to
a
misunderstanding where she's like, I'm afraid he'll kill me. I hope it reflects more on her believing that she's a monster than, I have to fear for my life because Geralt might kill me if he finds out I'm special.
What I think it will be also is Geralt coming to the conclusion that he has a bit of a bias as well.
Yeah, he's got to take some diversity training.
He does. He has an unconscious bias against monsters.
Yeah, exactly. So after that happens, Nevillain turns back to normal. Now, this is, obviously, you had to have him clean-shaven, but I'm not used to this from Christopher.
Yeah, he didn't look like him.
Considering that, again, Torben Giantsbane had this big-ass beard. I'm not used to seeing a baby-faced man.
I liked it.
Yeah.
He looked great.
Yeah, I think he did, but he could care less because he is incredibly sad because the love of his life just died.
The love of his life just died. He also admits that he, Siri's like, it's okay, like, you're a good person, you can make better, and he's like, I'm not, like, the love of my life is dead, and I would have rather just been a beast forever, because then it would have been a punishment for what I've done.
Yeah, so he basically reveals that he had found Verena injured in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the only people who wasn't scared of him, and so she ended up choosing to stay and fell in love with him. And in exchange, he sort of tried to keep her vampirism at bay by letting her feed on him.
Yeah, and then he also reveals that he raped the priestess.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, so it turns out that, like you said, like the love and blood stuff, you know, losing true love was what broke the curse. It ended up being both, you know, drawing blood from your true love.
Yeah.
And Nivellen admits, he's like, listen, I kind of slacked on the job here. I turned my eyes away from what Verena was doing to the village because, listen, she had the hots for me.
Yeah.
You know?
He didn't want to be alone.
Yeah. And so he reveals that, listen, it wasn't just graffiti. He raped that priestess that cursed him. And it's weird to say I love this idea, but again, if we're talking about, you know, again...
It's not good to say that.
But the thing about... apologies because I'm going back to Beauty and the Beast, but the entire lesson there, right, was that he was cursed on the outside, and it was all about finding the man inside. The exact opposite with Nivellen here.
Am I a man?
Yeah, exactly. Nivellen, you know, the argument that Ciri had was really that Belle argument of like, yeah, you look like a monster, but truly you're a man inside. He is a monster inside for what he did, and he knows it.
And he knows it. Well, and I think there is something to be said for somebody who takes penance and is trying to make amends for their wrongdoing, you know, knowing that they can't ever really make amends. So I think that him becoming human feels like he was given something that he doesn't deserve. He was like, I should have stayed a monster. And, you know, even when he's leaving, he's like, just end it now. Like, just kill me.
So my read is that Geralt looked pain. Like, he was like, damn, this really sucks. So you saw that as well?
Yeah, but to the extent where he feels like he lost a friend.
Yeah.
You know, like, he thought this guy was somebody, and he's not. You know, he didn't think he was, like, the best of the best, but he didn't think that he was a bad, bad person.
It's very much that thing of, like, this is why I don't hang out with humans long term, you know?
Exactly. And so when he turns his back to leave, they both turn their back on him. And even Ciri looks, like, dejected and just, like, so bummed out. And he's like, just end it now. Just end it now. And Geralt's like, do it yourself.
Yeah, you're
like,
mortal now. And
kill yourself, man.
And we see the lights go out, which represents, I think, so many things for him. But most literally that the magic has gone now that the curse is over.
Yeah. So he's just, like, in this, like, abandoned house now by himself.
In the woods, Geralt finally comes down from his elixir high.
Yes.
And Ciri gives him this look of, like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Remember when you had black eyes and looked cracked out for a while?
Yeah, yeah. And he didn't explain that to her, so he just did it.
Yeah. So this is when the point that we admitted earlier, this is when Ciri brings up, she's like, there's something wrong with me. Everywhere I go, people die. I could probably burn the whole world without meaning to, and that makes me afraid. And
same.
Yeah, I mean, and Geralt replies, though, fear is an illness. If you catch it and leave it untreated, it can consume you. And the only vaccine for fear, because you should get vaccinated, is to face it.
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
And
it
I'm not
sense.
Sure what that means in this case, but this is where Geralt, like, vocally, vehemently promises Ciri he won't let anything happen to her. And for what it's worth, in the moment, she does seem to smile and accept this. So, again, she might have some doubts in the back of her head of what Verena told her.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, she's like, I'm good to trust in this guy, at least over the vampire that was, you know, bedding a beast of a man.
Right, exactly.
So we end things there with the two of them. Do you have any other thoughts about Geralt and Ciri before we finish off the episode?
No.
All right, well, let's finish on I would have been fine finishing there, but I guess we have to finish on a bit of a cliffhanger, again, even though all these episodes dropped at once. Fringilla, you know, tries to be the drill sergeant, is like, everyone, get up, you lazy maggots, we gotta get to Syntra.
Yeah.
And Yennefer's like, oh, I think there's a mutiny on your hands pretty soon, but there'll be no men soon enough to be angry because they all die.
Yeah, they all get, like, pulled up and into sky.
Yeah, that's what our son says whenever he, like, throws a balloon in
up
the
into
air.
Sky.
Basically, what it seems like is these seem almost like harpoons. Like, these are spears on ropes.
Yeah.
And it seems like invisible forces are throwing, impaling,
and
then pulling back. I thought initially it was legs from another one of these spider creatures, but these are much more man-made. And so it's just Yennefer and Fringilla left, frantically back to back, circling, not seeing their enemy, wondering what comes next.
Spooky.
Spooky. We were out of the frying pan into the fire with spookiness. You know, Geralt and Ciri have escaped the vampires, but now it seems like Yennefer and Fringilla might be besieged by invisible people.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much the rest of the season will be more, like, arc-related to the overarching story of, like, Nilfgaard and Fringilla and Ciri and blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. Or will we get more of these, like, Monster of the Week things like we did in season one, you know, knowing that The Last Wish was really about that, and the other books don't have as much of that tone to it, you know what I mean? So yeah, I'm curious.
My best guess is, if they're going to keep Yennefer separated from mm-hmm. Geralt and Ciri for the majority of this season, I think what we'll get, honestly, is a hybrid of what you said, where one storyline will be a bit more episodic, and the other one will be
And then, like, rotating back
so,
and forth.
So, like,
yeah.
For instance, this week was Monster of the Week with Geralt and Ciri, mm-hmm. whereas the Yennefer Fringilla stuff was more tied to the Nilfgaard stuff. I think next week we could see if, depending on who Yennefer and Fringilla get kidnapped by, that's more
right.
episodic. While obviously, again, next episode being called Kaer Morhen shows Geralt and
yeah,
Ciri.
Yeah, so I imagine
there.
That will be, yeah, exactly. Like, who knows what sort of big bad that will Yennefer will have to face, because I think that the Witcher stuff kind of leads a little bit better into that more, like, monster stuff, because there's, yeah. you know, but I imagine, you know, they'll try.
Yeah, so we shall see. Again, this is the first of 8 episodes. We have mm-hmm. no idea if this is going to lead a trend. Is this going to be an outlier where we're looking back and we're like, oh, that was weird that they started
And are you proud of me for not watching more last
night? I am
night?
Very proud of you. You were able to stave off temptation, but now you are ready to just, like, let all this blood
no,
out.
No, you know what? I don't
feast.
Think I'll watch anymore.
Is it you're one and done with The Witcher?
As if.
Well, we're so happy to have you on board. Even just talking about this episode more, I thought, was really fun. You know, I think The Witcher is a really cool surface level show, but it really is, the more you explore themes and characters, the more there actually is surprising stuff buried underneath there, right? It's beastly on the outside, but even deeper on the inside, as you were. And I could especially imagine the whole what makes a monster theme is going to be incredibly prevalent for the rest of season 2.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's, you know, going to be a lot in the next episode too.
So again, at this point, this is when we usually, like, take a break, come back, do a whole macro perspective. We are not doing that for episode 1 because, as Angela says, that's all we've watched. But starting next week with episode 2, we will be doing that. So if you have feedback about episode 1, either from a macro or micro perspective, feel free to send it in. Either email mike@postshowrecaps.com. Again, put the episode title that you're referencing in the subject header, or you can write it in the Post Show Recaps Discord in the Witcher channel as well. I will try to gather as much as possible so we can talk all about it. But I'm really excited. I thought this was a really fun episode, and I think if this is the path that we're starting on with season 2, I think it's going to be really, really great. And the reviews that have come in so far, like,
are good.
I'm gonna check Rotten Tomatoes right now, but
it doesn't have anything.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I believe someone had told me that it had a 100% fresh score on Rotten Tomatoes.
I was looking earlier and it didn't have anything.
All right, so it has been purged in that regard. I'm looking right now.
96%. Oh, okay. Yeah, it didn't have, like, I looked at it earlier today and it was like nothing yet.
96% from 23 reviews. That's
pretty good.
That's pretty good. Season one had,
it's not a lot of reviews too, you can't really.
Season one had a 68% tomato meter from the critics, so, like, that's a considerable upgrade. It seems like maybe some of the quibbles,
they don't know what they're talking about.
Well, I think some of the quibbles
no!
people had, they're wrong. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're wrong, critictum. Well, we're happy to be talking about it either way. We're happy to have you all along for the ride, hopefully. If you have any stuff that you want to tweet at us as well, you can. At a Mike Bloom type on Twitter, at Ange Pelagi on Twitter, at Post Show Recaps on Twitter as well. So, also, again, really recommend that you all subscribe to the Witcher Only podcast feed at postshowrecaps.com/WitcherPod, mm-hmm. P-O-D, and leave us some ratings and reviews while you're there as well, especially early on in the season. We really want to catch the eyes of, you know, so many people, especially people who aren't tuned into Post Show Recaps and might want some Witcher coverage. We want to be on their radar, unlike Nivellen, right? We don't want to shut ourselves away in a manner.
No.
So please, if you have the wherewithal to do so, we would greatly appreciate it. So that being said, we're going to close things out here. We'll be back next week, next Saturday, covering episode 2 of season 2 of The Witcher, Kaer Morhen. Again, we'll be doing a regular recap, and then a separate section from the binge mode perspective. Angela and I will have watched the entire season by then and look back on Kaer Morhen as whether or not it is a big turning point, ironic in some ways. We shall see, but I'm really excited to see what's to come with The Witcher Season 2. Thank you all so much for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.